Hello and welcome to the Football Diary podcast. You're here with me and Dave this week as we look to review not the most exciting weekend of Premier League football, but the fixtures are coming thick and fast. So we're here to also preview this week's midweek games as the Premier League gets ready to close up for the World Cup soon, Dave. There's been a lot to deal with and a lot to take in, particularly when you consider that we had Liverpool-Man City at the weekend, which traditionally has been one of the biggest games in English football. We've also had the Ballon d'Or ceremony this week. So a lot for us to talk about, Dave. What are you looking forward to the most this week?
Like you mentioned, it's the fixture pile-ups, you know, it's coming thick and fast, isn't it? And I mean, it's strange, actually, having so many fixtures midweek. But yeah, like you mentioned, it's exciting. There's obviously a big rush to get them all in before the World Cup, like you mentioned as well. So it's going to be interesting. Another thing I think that's obviously been tainted as well, it seems like there's a lot of players getting injured as well, which is very untimely with the World Cup coming up as well. So let's just hope there's not too many, you know, big profile players that are picking up injuries, because obviously we want to see the best players at the World Cup coming up as well. So
definitely. And the main thing will be whether players are coming into any sort of form before the World Cup as well. We saw a few players this weekend that we've kind of been talking about drop out of the side, or we've seen a couple of players actually get some goals. And from an England perspective, there was some interesting performances, and I'm sure we'll cover them. But let's start then at Anfield, where this week Liverpool move on to play West Ham, and they're doing so off the back of a victory against Man City, which I don't think either of us were expecting, really, were we, Dave?
No. You know, it's a funny one, because I did say to a couple of Liverpool fans, I said, oh, I actually anticipate it to be a lot closer than some people are saying. I still thought Man City would have too much for them. But there were a number of factors, really, that influenced the way that the game went. One of them was Liverpool set up a lot more pragmatic than they did against Arsenal. And I think that was largely down to them paying a lot more respect to Man City than they did to Arsenal. I thought the way they approached that Arsenal game was, you know, massively naive, especially with how well we've seen Arsenal playing. But yeah, the actual game itself, Liverpool was set up brilliantly. That's the best I've seen them defend for a while. Probably all season, actually. One thing to highlight for me, I thought Van Dijk was at his best game of the season. Joe Gomez definitely had his best game of the season as well.
Yeah.
And that, I think their game was... So it was mainly based around, you know, doing the basics really, which they haven't been able to do. It's not the best game I've seen them from offensively. I think there's a lot more to come from them on that side of things. But it was a mix of Liverpool, you know, the intensity was brilliant. That's as good as I've seen them all season.
Yeah,
in terms of chasing the ball down. But it was a mix of Man City not really being at the races for me. I thought they were a lot slower in their transition. I thought the lineup for me was a strange one as well. I don't know why Grealish didn't start for me. I think on that left-hand side, we know Bernardo Silva's had a really good record in some of these big matches, but for me, he didn't really turn up. I thought he was a bit poor on the day. Foden coming off that left-hand side, he really suits the right-hand side for me a lot better. I feel like his game just looks more natural on that right hand side. And Haaland, when there were a few, you know, moments when the ball was played into sort of around the 6 yard box in those spaces, he just wasn't there. It looked like he got caught on his heels a few times, which, you know, which is strange. It shows that even the likes of him can have an off day, even though he did come close on a couple of occasions, you know, to scoring. So
it seemed to me like City were expecting Liverpool to go toe-to-toe with them and try and take the game to them. And actually, they didn't do that at all. It looked like one team had a game plan and one team panicked. And Liverpool's plan was clearly soak up pressure, defend deep and prepare yourselves for those different channels of attack and then catch them on the break, which we've seen Liverpool do really successfully before. But actually, it's so much harder to do that when you're expected to win every game. Liverpool very rarely go into a game as the underdog, and I actually thought it suited them in this game. I actually thought the fact that they paid that respect to Man City helped them, because it meant that, like you said, they were meeting the fundamentals, they were focusing on the basics, and then it opened up space. It was so predictable because they were just opening up so much space. And players that you wouldn't expect to be dropping deep for Man City were. Even Foden, it was very rare that he was getting into the final third. He was dropping a lot deeper to pick the ball up. Bernardo Silva, at some points, Bernardo Silva was the deepest midfielder. It was really interesting to see where City were trying to get their defensive points in. And Cancelo, unfortunately, just it was probably the worst I've seen him play this season. He wasn't bringing much going forward, other than that one cross he put in for Haaland that Van Dijk cleared quite comfortably. And defensively, he really struggled, which you kind of expect, because very often this season, he's not really had to defend for Man City. And you're always going to have to when you come across the likes of Salah, Jota, Nunes when he came on. Although, we'll talk about that in a second, I'm sure. But no, it was an off day for Man City, it's safe to say. Liverpool were set up much stronger. And I think some of that comes down to their defensive work. With that in mind, they now play West Ham this week, Dave. They are going to be expected to win that game. They are the favourites again. Do you think Klopp changes his system for this game? Or do you think that maybe Trent remains on the bench and Gomez has the support of Milner at right back rather than
I think
Trent?
He might be forced to change, to be honest. Obviously, with the injury to Jota as well, the news coming out today that he's obviously injured for, you know, an extended period by the looks of it. He's going to miss the World Cup as well. Obviously, they were missing Diaz as well for this game. You know, it must be a bit of a worry for Klopp and how he obviously approaches games. It looks like Firmino's come into the reckoning. And I don't know whether that was kind of on the back of, you know, Diaz not being available for this game and his reluctance to start Nunez. And obviously, we saw how that played out against Arsenal when he did start Nunez and they just... setup looked all wrong, so it's a headache for him, really. And there's been a lot of talk whether they bring Trent back in and play him on the right wing to kind of obviously fill a spot, because for me I feel like he could probably offer quite a bit going forward. Obviously we saw Milner do a good job at right back, but I think I think this is a potential banana skin, and we say banana skin but I think that's being probably a bit disrespectful to West Ham, because obviously they've looked a little bit more themselves the last couple of weeks, and Liverpool haven't exactly been, you know, the Liverpool that we've all known this last 2 or 3 years. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them slip up here and potentially it'll be a draw.
So who's the starting back four against West Ham, do you think?
It wouldn't surprise me to see the same again. I think it'd be cruel to shy away from that. And the only reason I can see him changing it is tactically. If he decides to, but if he goes with Trent on the right wing, I think Milner behind him, that would be, you know, a pretty good way to start the game.
Is it problematic as an England fan to watch Trent play right wing after we've now seen Kyle Walker and Reece James pick up injuries? Now, Walker might be back for the World Cup, but all of a sudden, we were talking about whether Trent would even get into the squad. Now he kind of has to, you'd imagine. Is it a problem if he has an extended run out of the team or doesn't play it right back?
No. Even if he was playing, there's no way he's getting into that England side at fullback. He doesn't fancy
him.
Even
with the injuries?
It's evident. It's clear now, isn't it, to see. You've obviously seen the same, obviously, albeit a different position with Madison. For some reason or another, doesn't fancy him. He doesn't fancy Trent. You know, it will be Trippier in that spot over him time and time again. This might be his best route to getting in that England team if he's going to come in on the right hand side of a midfield, you know, as a three or on the right wing. It might be something that Southgate would be more open to, but as a manager, Southgate's too pragmatic a manager to even entertain the idea of Alexander Arnold playing at right back, especially in a back four.
There are two other players worth focusing on and talking about the form of them. Obviously, Salah got his goal in this game off the back of a hat-trick in the Champions League. And he goes into this West Ham game looking a bit more like his old self after a slow start to the season. But then there is also the Darwin Nunes project and how that shapes up at Liverpool. Big money spent on him. And one thing that seemed really apparent to me in this game is they've not worked out how to click yet. Obviously, everyone is going to draw to those moments at the end of the match when both of them had opportunities where really if they squared the ball, it was a goal. Nunes in particular. What did you make of that, Dave? Do you think it's just a case of new teammates still trying to gel? Do you think Nunes thought he had a point to prove, or do you think this is just the difference between Mane, a real team player, and Nunes, a number nine? Why has that not seemed to really have clicked in this game?
I think options. It came down to options as well. I think if he did add Diaz fit, I don't think Nunes would have if even played or come off the bench. If he absolutely had to. And in this case, he probably did have to. I think he probably felt he needed fresh legs on the pitch. Mm-hmm. We saw in obviously that moment, we know which moment it is, where I think there was one City defender back and there were three Liverpool players, one on the edge of the box, one on the back post. And you just thought, it's not even playing right at the top level, is it? And that's how bad a decision it was for me. I think even a Sunday League player just rolls them in.
Yeah,
you know, it's not even taking the plaudits for yourself. For any sort of, you know, contribution that he makes a minute is going to be vital for Liverpool. Even, you know, an assist is as good as a goal, as you know, as we both know. But
yeah,
he seems to like just wants to kind of really make his mark. And, you know, fair enough if he's got all the confidence to try and do that. But that was just a bad decision for me.
It was.
Seems to me at the minute, I think it's a bad signing. And I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a good player. He might well become a good player one day, but I just don't know whether he is the right player for that Liverpool setup.
Yeah, potentially. Before we move on from this game and look a bit more into the midweek fixture, two other people that I don't think shower themselves in glory, Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp. Now, they are two of the highest rated managers in the world. People love them for their charisma and their antics sometimes. For me, both of them took it way too far this week. In a week where we've seen the Merseyside youth fixtures all postponed because of the treatment of referees at that level, there was obviously a referee at a grassroots game brutally assaulted not long ago. The confrontation of Klopp and that linesman was disgusting to me. He's right. Bernardo Silva fouled Salah, but the reaction of him and the message that sends was just foul. And then Guardiola coming out and trying to blame the whole thing on the refereeing decisions that were correct. That seemed bizarre to me too, Dave. I mean, what did you think? First of all, what did you think of the Man City disallowed goal? Obviously, it's disallowed for a foul on Fabinho in the build-up to the goal. Now, it could have been disallowed for two more reasons. First of all, it wasn't a goal kick to Man City, it was a corner, but then they move on the play, Haaland fouls Fabinho. Then when they get the ball forward, Alisson has his hands on the ball and it's taken out of his hands. Now, I saw Villa have a goal disallowed last season because Kasper Schmeichel had one hand on the ball. So how you could say Alisson wasn't in control of it. So there are three things that could have disallowed that goal. And Guardiola's comments afterwards were, well, this is Anfield. What do you expect? What is that, just him trying to take blame away from his players? Is it fair for him to make a comment like that? What do you think?
In this instance, it's not fair for him to make that comment. In the grand scheme of things, I agree. I think Liverpool have had a rub of the green in quite a few games. Not mainly this season, but yeah, it was a foul. You know, that's undisputed. Yeah. You can't tell me that there's not. That was the main thing that was wrong for me. I thought it was touch and go whether the ball was in the goalkeeper's hand. I think he had one hand on it and like an arm on, but then obviously you can dispute whether he's in full control, you know, of the ball at that time. But yeah, it's a foul. Like, you can't, there's no two ways about it. And it's just the heat of the moment, the emotions at the time. He'll probably look back on that. And if it, you know, the shoe was on the other foot, I'm sure he would fully expect that goal to get ruled out.
Yeah.
In terms of Jurgen Klopp, he's lucky to have not had more than one red card for me.
Yeah, definitely.
He's gotten away with this sort of thing a lot over the years, and it's finally and rightly being punished. So he can't have any arguments. I mean, he's probably lucky that these sort of things, you know, aren't out in the open about what managers do say to officials, because it's quite shameful, really, if you were to know what was said or really.
And to be honest, it set the tone for a lot. There were Liverpool fans throwing coins at Guardiola, supposedly. Man City fans singing disgusting songs at Liverpool fans. It wasn't really a very nice affair. Now, a lot of people have talked about how we're kind of lacking a big competitive rivalry in English football at the moment, and this fixture had the potential to do that. But actually, we kind of risked that turning sour with this attitude. It was disappointing to see that, I think. But now, Liverpool obviously go into this West Ham game. They've beaten Man City, which is not necessarily what they expected. They've come off the back of a fantastic result in the Champions League as well. Klopp will be suspended for this game. They have got those injuries. West Ham, though, not had the best start to the season. They drew with Southampton at the weekend. What are you expecting? I know you said earlier you saw this as a potential banana skin, but have West Ham got enough to challenge Liverpool right now, do you think?
Yeah, I think it depends what side turns up. I feel like it's just almost like new signings are sort of struggling still to kind of find the way of playing with the rest of this team. So obviously, Scamacca looked like he had quite a good game actually against Southampton, albeit obviously not scoring, but he had a few moments where he looked quite bright. They've definitely obviously got the potential to hurt Liverpool, and we need to not get carried away. Obviously, this is a really good performance from Liverpool, but I see people saying, "Oh, they're back in the title race." That you know they can go on and build on this. So of course, they can build on it. You know, they've got to carry that momentum through into this game. And, you know, we've seen them with their defensive vulnerabilities this season, and it's just whether they can carry on that form that we saw in the last game. Like you mentioned, for me, they've not got the offensive capabilities as they had last year or even the year before anymore, especially with those absentees in Jota and Diaz. I'm not sure, is Diaz back for this game?
Diaz will be out until after the World Cup, apparently. Well, another team looking at the top four will be Chelsea, who come off the back of a 2-0 win against Aston Villa before they go to play Brentford in midweek. Now, really interesting to look at Chelsea and how Potter has settled in there. They look really successful under him so far, unbeaten still. That kind of completely goes against their weekend opponents, who have another young English manager who was supposed to bring a lot to the Premier League. So we have Graham Potter and his success at Chelsea in comparison to the failings of Steven Gerrard at Aston Villa. Now, Villa go to London as well for a trip to Fulham. Could be Gerrard's last game. So we'll look at both sides really, Dave, because these were two managers that really we were excited to see whether we had this new generation of English talent. One of them is proving that massively. One of them is not. Let's start with the weekend's game. Chelsea 2-0 winners after a Mason Mount double. First of which comes from Villa's own mistake, you'd say. And the second, you could maybe argue the same, as Emi Martinez stepped across way too quickly for that free kick. But Potter's got Chelsea playing good football and got players excelling in a very Graham Potter way, hasn't he?
You've got to look at, I think, in terms of Chelsea, the way off, they've kind of gone under the radar a little bit, and the attention's kind of been kept away from them, really, with obviously what's going on at the very top of the table. Arsenal doing, really well. Man City, looking brilliant. So, in a way, I think it's gone quite well for him, that the limelight hasn't really been on him as much as maybe it would be. But, he's had a great start to the season. They've looked really positive in how they're playing. Obviously, it's still very early on. So all of his methods, obviously, we probably won't start to shape up after, it might take a few months from now. But, I can't imagine he would have wished for a better start. Really, obviously, the draw in the, obviously, the first Champions League game. Yeah. But I think, it's an interesting one. I'll be fascinated to see what he does with his team when he's obviously had a transfer window, what sort of players he'll be looking to kind of bring in. But I think they will be certainly looking for top four, obviously, minimum. But in this game against Villa, I still feel like Chelsea look a bit vulnerable defensively. Villa created so many chances in this game. And that's really been, the summary, especially of the last few games for Villa. They've made chances, they just can't score goals. And for me, it doesn't make for a great game for me, because Fulham have struggled defensively, but Villa can't score goals. I can't see anything past the draw.
Neither.
I think Fulham have been looking for as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was a score draw, maybe a 1-1. Or a 0-0.
I'd be amazed.
Score draw. I think you're a bit unfortunate. You're unfortunate not to score. Kepa had some really good saves Obviously, that triple save, and Leon Bailey hit the bar as well. Yeah. You'd fancy, you know, they should have scored at least one goal. But
do you know what, though? Honestly, that Kepa triple save, as good as that is, and I know he has to do it and he has to be in a position, it was easy enough for him.
Back. McGinn straight at the goalkeeper, and he saves the follow-up as well from Ramsey, and somehow Chelsea's goal survives.
First one was hit straight at him. Yeah. The second one was just low, but pretty much straight at him. And the third one was the good save, really. It wasn't hard. Yeah. They're making a real meal of it. And in the first half, once they went 1-0 down, obviously, they had to step things up, and they did. But what's the point? It's just boring to watch. So we've got Graham Potter really quickly getting his philosophy across at Chelsea and bringing someone like Mason Mount really into the forefront of our thoughts before the World Cup. His form has picked up massively. He's brought Kepa back into the side, and he looks like a reformed goalkeeper almost. He does look much stronger. Gallagher's getting chances. Loftus-Cheek is still in there. So you can see what Potter is implementing. I've moaned about it enough. What's Gerrard doing at Villa, and how is he still there?
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to a few fans over the last few days who've been ringing into certain radio stations, things like Villa fans, and yeah, it's been... I've not seen a great deal of Villa all the time, but from what I have seen, it's been quite dismal showings. The football's just been bland, and yeah, the fans aren't happy. So, I mean, you know better than me.
Do you know what?
Where did it go? You know, where did it go from? If they're not getting rid of Gerrard, if they don't, what is the next step? Where do they go? Like, because I can't see any progression from Villa this year. If anything, they've just gone backwards.
Oh, we definitely have.
And that's with the acquisitions that they've made in the summer as well.
The last five games have been televised, so it's an easy opportunity to see Villa, even if you're not at the ground now. And they have made for terrible watching. There was the Man City game where they did defend very well and they got a point from it. Great. Then we had Southampton. Southampton are terrible. So that was an easy win. The draw against Leeds, even though they were down to 10 men, was one of the worst games of football I've ever watched. Beaten only by the Nottingham Forest game, which they then drew again. Terrible game of football. And now we've lost this Chelsea game. They sacked Dean Smith when we were 16th and 2 points off the bottom three. We're now 16th and 1 point off the bottom three with Gerrard in charge. It has to be over. I think if the games weren't coming so thick and fast this week, maybe they would have acted sooner and removed him after the Chelsea game. Everything I read last night was that he was gone, that the decision had been made, and today we were expecting news that he was being removed. And then instead, there was footage of Villa training at Bodymore Heath put out on social media, and Gerrard is there. So clearly they haven't done that yet. I think that's probably down to the fact that the club don't want to remove someone until they've got someone new in place. And by all accounts, they are doing everything they can to try and convince Pochettino. That will take some convincing. Going from PSG down to Aston Villa is a huge, huge commitment to a project rather than a status. It's a step down for him. And is Pochettino at a point in his career where he's happy to do that? Who knows? The other candidate apparently is Unai Emery. Again, would you leave Villarreal for Villa right now? It's an interesting one. I don't know with Villa. I just think they're so uninspiring at the moment. You say about creating chances in this game, that's true. But if you look at their XG over the last 10 games, they don't average much more than a goal a game, if that. It's been absolutely terrible watching. That's with creative players like Coutinho, Buendia, Leon Bailey in the squad. They can't work out whether they need to play one of them, two of them, or three of them, or none of them. Danny Ings and Ollie Watkins just aren't firing, and Cameron Archer's been sat on the bench. Apparently he's picked up another injury, which is unfortunate. I don't know what a Gerrard team looks like still. I think that's the thing that really frustrates me. I didn't want Gerrard in the first place, really, but when you get him, you accept him, you support your manager. It was clear at Rangers what style Gerrard played. He kind of played a bit like Ranić started to try at United, with two number 10s behind striker. And when you looked at Villa's squad, it was perfect for that, because they had Coutinho and Buendia. He never plays them together. He doesn't do that. I don't know what a Steven Gerrard team looks like, and we've had him for a year now. he doesn't know his best 11. We've been unfortunate with a couple of injuries, but actually, this week we play Fulham. Now, we lost to Bournemouth on the opening day of the season. We drew with Nottingham Forest, the other two promoted sides. Fulham will beat us. I'm really confident of that. Fulham are a much better side than us right now. And that is ludicrous. Like you say, the business that Villa have done, there is absolutely no way they should be thinking about 16th. They should be twice as high. And look, the league table is congested at the moment. We go out, we beat Fulham, and then we beat Brentford at the weekend, and Villa are probably in the top eight all of a sudden. But I just don't see that happening because I can't see us scoring goals. So the sooner Villa act, the sooner they remove Gerrard, the better. I hate saying that about a manager, but I want him gone there.
Do you think there's a bit of a sort of an instance of a bit of a division in the squad? I mean, if you look earlier on in the season, you know, the situation with Mings and the captaincy, John McGinn, all these new players that have been brought in, a lot of them obviously being new to the Premier League.
Yeah.
Obviously, Coutinho coming in, big personality again. Do you think it's a case of him struggling to get some on his side, into his ideas, into his way of playing, and some are buying into it, some aren't? Because we've seen a lot of players, we've seen some players dropped. Obviously, the likes of Buendia has not always started games. Yep. Mings obviously dropped out the side at times during the season. So it seems like it's a little bit, you know, things behind the scenes. I don't want to obviously say that's how it is, but
I wouldn't be surprised.
You can understand that being the case.
Yeah, I don't think there is a division between the playing squad, but I do think there are a lot of people there that have no faith in Gerrard already, and I understand why. You look at McGinn's form this season since he's been given the captaincy, and it just shows what an error that was. Mings made a mistake for the goal in this game, which is so frustrating because it's something that gets levelled at Tyrone Mings quite a lot, that he makes too many mistakes. And it's the problem is, in the age we live in, that's on Twitter every 5 seconds. You see those videos, they make really clear reading. Mings has been our best defender this season by some distance. He was our player of the month last month. He's been absolutely fantastic. And now all that we talked about is that mistake. And look, you don't want your defenders to make a mistake, but it happens to the best of us. It will happen. But it's clear that he is not very happy, and you can understand why. He's lost his place in the England squad. He's lost the captaincy for absolutely no reason. I would be frustrated. And actually, one thing that was really encouraging about Villa over the last few years is these new owners built an amazing culture around the club and really got the fans to buy in again. They had Dean Smith, they had Jack Grealish, and I've talked about that enough on here. But that core of players has gone now, really. The defence that we lined up with this weekend were all under Dean Smith, and that was really interesting to see. So was the midfield, because actually we haven't seen that for a while. There's been a lot of change in. Obviously, they brought in the likes of Lucas Digne and Diego Carlos, which should improve the defence. Typically, injury hits that. They bring in Boubacar Kamara, which should improve the midfield. Injury hits that. So Gerrard almost looks frustrated that he's having to play these players, and they look frustrated at playing for him. And I do think this cycle needs to move on a little bit now, which is a real shame, because those players have got a real spot in Villa fans' hearts now. Even the likes of El Ghazi and Trezeguet that moved on this summer, I see Villa fans all over Twitter going, I wish we could have them back. Because it wouldn't be worse than it is right now, but it brings back that feel-good factor. And Gerrard is taking that away slowly with his comments in the press, his actions in terms of the management of the team and the results that we're getting. It's just nowhere near good enough. So I do think if the board get even a sniff that Pochettino will come, they'll sack Gerrard. If they can't get the right man in, they're patient. And Gerrard has friends in high places. Christian Perslow loves him. So I don't know. It's going to take time. I really thought today was the day, but maybe with the quick fixture turnaround, they didn't want to move things too much, and maybe they'll wait to the World Cup. But the worst thing that could happen for us in a weird way is beating Fulham and beating Brentford, because it will give Gerrard 6 more weeks. And actually, it won't improve. It would be a fluke. So, I don't know. I look at this game. Fulham obviously drew with Bournemouth at the weekend. What do you think, Dave? You're saying a draw for this game?
If it's a draw, I hope it's an entertaining one, because I feel like we're in need of some goals after, you know, the lack of goals at the weekend.
Yeah.
So, I'm hoping for a high score. high scoring game, but I wouldn't surprise me if it was just a 1-1. Like you mentioned, you're confident in Fulham winning the game.
Yeah.
I'm kind of siding if there's a team that's going to win the game, I think it probably will be Fulham. Sorry to say, but...
No.
I'm going for a 1-1.
At Craven Cottage, Mitrovic will score at least twice and we won't score. That's my guess. If I was a betting man, that's where my money would go. The other game we sort of started to touch on was that Brentford will face Chelsea. Obviously, Chelsea coming off the back of that win at Aston Villa. Brentford beat Brighton 2-0 as well. Two Ivan Toney goals. Another player who's hitting form at just the right time before the World Cup. Bit of a derby match here. What do you think? Brentford, have they got anything? Can they lay a glove on Chelsea?
I'd like to say yes, because I've got a bit of a soft spot for Brentford and, you know, the way they play the game. I think this season we've seen kind of a bit of a mixed bag from them in certain games. Obviously, the highs of obviously beating United 4-0. But I'd expect Chelsea to come through this. They're riding a wave with the honeymoon period of Graham Potter at the minute. So I expect something like a 3-1. I think Brentford are, you know, looking really good going forward. Ivan Toney, like you mentioned, is in the form of his life. So it'd be nice to see him get something from this game. But I just think Chelsea are looking pretty strong at the minute.
Definitely. Yeah, they're the kind of interesting fixtures midweek for me. A couple of other fixtures worth noting. Obviously, Man United play Spurs, which could be a bit tasty. We know what happened last season, Spurs United, right?
Yeah, obviously, you know, Ronaldo had that hat-trick. Could have been a completely different game. Spurs actually played quite well in that game. In the form that he's in at the minute, I can't see that happening. But, I mean, stranger things have happened. I'd be surprised if Ronaldo starts if Rashford's fit. I know that Ten Hag said that he'd not felt great. I think he had a bit of illness. Obviously came on for the last 20 minutes in the last game. So we'll see what happens there. Eriksen's doubtful as well. So
it's a shame.
It sounds crazy, but we missed McTominay in the last game when Fred came in. Fred had a terrible game. And I was saying to my mate, because I watched them in the week against Nicosia when we snatched that 1-0 winner at the end, and Fred had an absolutely terrible game, really bad game. And I said, if Fred starts the weekend and plays like that, we're not winning the game. And it's just something about Fred. It always seems like the chances fall to him, of all people.
Good positioning.
Yeah.
It's a funny one with United at the moment, isn't it? Because actually, I think they're kind of going under the radar for playing quite badly. Obviously, they lost to City. They had those two Europa League games where they just got through. Games that really, if you'd read the scoreline afterwards and it had been 9-0 Man United, you would have gone, yeah, probably. And actually, they only just managed to get through both of them. And then, of course, they drew 0-0 at the weekend with Newcastle as well. Oh, maybe a bit of controversy around that one.
There's no maybes about it, isn't
there? I knew you were going to say that. The one for
me... Before the show, we were talking about talking points, you know, and I was going to mention refereeing. Well, I did mention refereeing decisions, but you just don't want to talk about them, do you? Because you get fed up of speaking about it, of how bad it is. I won't say too much, but obviously the Sancho penalty. It was theatrical in the way he went down.
He did himself no favours.
It doesn't take a genius to look back at that and see that it's a foul and a penalty.
Well, I'm going to ask, what will Ronaldo be more annoyed about this week? His goal against Newcastle not standing, where I actually can see... I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing, but there's an argument. He probably should have had that goal, really. Or will he be more annoyed about the fact he came 20th in the Ballon d'Or this year?
Probably the second one, to be honest. Probably the Ballon d'Or.
Well, let's talk about that now then. Obviously, that was announced last night. And I think it was one of those where we all knew who the winner was going to be, really. It's really hard to argue for anyone other than this man. And actually, really brilliant to see after the season he had. Karim Benzema is now the Ballon d'Or winner for 2022. Second place, Sadio Mane, which I thought was really interesting. Obviously, after the African Cup of Nations success and the way he got them to the World Cup, plus a successful season with Liverpool, even if at times the start of the season, he was quite poor, but this calendar year, he has been fantastic. And then Kevin De Bruyne in third, again, very justifiable, really, wasn't it? And then along for the women's, Patelas retained it for the second year in a row, which is interesting to see when there's only been five winners. So close for Mead. One vote was in it. One vote before we had an English Ballon d'Or winner, which would have been fantastic. And Sam Kerr came in third, obviously. What do you think, Dave? Any arguments with Benzema?
No, not at all. You know, you couldn't really write a season as good as that for him. You know, on a personal note and collectively as a team, Real Madrid obviously had an amazing season.
Yeah.
But we know how good he's been over the course of his career. And I think it's something that he just deserved. He's not had the personal accolade in the past. Uh-huh. And, you know, he fully deserves this moment.
Yeah.
And all the plaudits he's getting. The standards that obviously Ronaldo and Messi were setting in the past made it a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
And the standards that they set are going to take a lot for somebody to beat, really.
Do you know what? That's so true. I saw people like moaning about it almost, saying, oh, you can't tell me that Benzema's season was anywhere near as good as Suarez's last season for Liverpool and things like that. But it's irrelevant because it's being measured against everyone else that year, not Ronaldo and Messi of that year, which were just something else, obviously. But no, interesting to see Benzema win it. There was some very interesting names in the top 30 as well, obviously. Darwin Nunes was joint 25th, which I thought was really fantastic to see. Mike Mannion, I think, finished 17th after his title winning season.
Someone must be having a wind-up with him.
Yeah, 100%. Who's your hero of the week this week, Dave?
If we're going to stick to player, we've got to go with Mo Salah. We obviously gave last week and week before, I think we've given him a bit of criticism, and, you know, the way he's played, the way he took his goal again in this game was brilliant. And he looked a lot more like himself. So I feel as though we can only give it to him, really.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. What about our villain of the week then, Dave? I think there's a few candidates for this one. Most of them managerial or referees, I think. Who have you got for your villain of the week?
I think I'm going to go for Jurgen Klopp, just because of how ugly it came across in this game. We saw it from both managers. Both managers easily could have been sent off and we would have had no arguments, really. And I feel like this needed to be done, though. That a statement needed to be made because so many managers are getting away with, you know, being out of control, coming out of the technical area. It happens so often and just don't get punished. So I'm just glad that it has happened. And
there were only 15 goals in the Premier League this weekend, so it might be a bit harder to pick one. Obviously, we had couple from Mason Mount, Salah's goal against City, but who are you giving your goal of the week to?
I'm actually going to go for Declan Rice. I think he's not been on the score sheet before this goal for a while now. Really nice goal, set up really well. Nice little 1-2 on the edge of the box, and he finishes it brilliantly.
Excellent. And a player, again, that I'm really looking forward to performing really well at the World Cup, hopefully. Until then, there's going to be a lot of football for us to talk about. So if you want to keep watching us or keep listening to us, you know where we are. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Any support you give us is really great. And we've seen some real improvement in our numbers over the last month or so, which is really encouraging for us. It tells us to keep doing what we're doing. And it is something we love doing, isn't it, Dave? So all the support we get from you is appreciated. You know where we are on social, so please go and follow us on there as well. And Dave, thank you for joining me this week. But thank you guys for listening and joining us, as always. Thank you for watching the Football Diary Podcast.